Much madness is divinest sense to a discerning eye. Much sense, the starkest madness, 'tis the majority. In this, as all prevail, assent, and you are sane. Demure, you're straightway dangerous, and handled with a chain. That was Emily Dickinson's Much Madness is Divinest Sense. And as we pick back up from a rather unfortunate event where I'm now making sure that the red light is blinking before I try to pause or stop my recordings, we're going to try to pick up as best as we can. As we catch up to our heroes, the events that I had to abbreviate in the last episode, the camera pans around them. And there's that heavy metallic clicking as steel clicks on steel as the engine begins to cool. The various components and compartments built into this thing as they try to expand at different rates due to the contractions and expansions of different metals. That of metal cooling, but the relatively warm day sun is coming back down as we see Yakim laying on his back on the hood, his left arm kind of draped lazily across his eyes to provide a little bit of shade, his right hand already resting just along the pistol grip of his long rifle, and leaning out of the passenger side car, we hear just another as we look over and see his new companion leaning out of the window or leaning out of the door and losing her lunch yet again. Tawny, using her hand, kind of drapes the curtain of braids, the dreads that frame her face, just to keep them back and up and out of the way of the now slowly steaming away pile just next to the car. And she's kind of, "Hey there, juicy man. You sure we're far enough away from that there ley line storm?" Yakim goes, "I don't really know. It's somewhere back there. I thought we got far enough away that you stopped screaming and throwing up in the car. You know, fortunately you're awake now, so I think that might be pretty good sign that we're far enough away. I don't know how these things work." She goes, "That was so unpleasant. Oof. I do not be needing anything more to eat for today." "That's really good, because I'm going through our supply pack right now, and well, quite frankly, we may need to do some hunting while we're out here on the road, unless we find a restaurant somewhere nearby." She kind of looks over. I'd be bringing some fine smoked foods, but I do not be believing that I'm going to be eating in here today." "Alright, well, why don't you chuck some of that up here then?" "Didn't mean that." And he looks back, so looks over the side of the car. He catches her eye, and her face is definitely a little pale. "Alright, you know what? Why don't we just get back on the road?" She goes, "Yes, I think that would be a fine idea now." So as they pick back up, let's review over some of the things that we have currently going on. First and foremost, of course, we ended our last game with a chaos factor of 7. So based on the randomness of the ley line storm, the random events that keep seem to be triggering and falling after them on this drive out west, or drive out east actually, in Kansas. If we start looking at some of the things, let's take a look here. We'll ask our first roll of the game. Is Yakim, at least at the midway point of his patrol that he needs to make? I haven't been tracking perfectly on the miles. Looking at it more as an event-by-event, encounter-by-encounter scenario. And I was going to use this fate chart to determine, to get a relatively good idea. I could calculate it out. We figured it was going to be at least, I think I said it was like a 4 or 5 day trip. I know that I had rolled. It was effectively a 600-mile journey. But we will ask the initial question here. Is he at least midway on his trip out? I'm going to say this is unlikely, given how many times he was stopped. But even with a chaos factor of 7, it's a 65 and below. It's a 73. He's not at the halfway point yet. As, not at... Yakim kind of looks down. We've got enough fuel. I made sure to stockpile on that. Car's pretty busted up in a couple spots, so, you know, we start getting any more hail with worms or whatever the fuck that was, then windows aren't really there to keep it out. Rain's gonna suck. Bugs, too. So, if we can find a mechanic along the way, it might be worthwhile stopping for a couple hours, but I doubt they'll be able to patch up the windows, but can at least get the jitter out of the steering wheel. And then he kind of looks over and he sees Tawny. She's just, whatever you be saying, now, man, I am along because I think the spirits have sent me in this direction. And I think you are the one to guide me to what I need. Yeah. Whatever. You're pretty damn good in a fight, though. So I can't take that away. That one, you be right now, my. Now come along, you rude boy. He starts pulling the car into gear, and they take off. So, we will, let's see here. Now, of course, he doesn't level up until the end of this, or he doesn't gain an advancement until the end of this session. So, nothing has really changed on his stats. I'm giving Tawny the standard crazy stats. So, let's see now. I've got at least a couple days more drive. So I'm going to shuffle. We are going to deal cards. And on a face card, we are going to draw for an encounter. So in case you can't tell, yet again, we have been struck by a sickness in this house. Getting over on the far side of it, which is always a good thing because I have my voice back. I can't really do too much of an audio-only podcast without a voice. I guess I could have tried sign language, but I don't know it that well, and that doesn't really translate too well. But if you hear me stop to sniffle or pause the recording every now and then, just know that it's because I'm trying to save you from the weird sounds of the end of a cold. So let me grab the first couple of cards. First card off the deck is a 10 of diamonds, so no encounter there. Second day is the 9. The last day here is the 2. So the next few days go without any serious encounters, which is good for these two. The conversations, of course, as they build up, eventually become almost a little head-spinning and confusing for Yakim. That first day all the way through after the encounter with the ley line, Yakim. You said you're a Psy Stalker. Everybody in your tribe, you know, they do what you do? She goes, that's kind of a rude question now, don't you think? No, I had to be out here hunting for them Simvan and any other creatures that be coming their way. See, my tribe, we are not too, they're not too strong now. And without me there, I have to make sure that they are safe. And so, why are you hitching a ride with me? I think you might be the one to help me find what they are safe with. Okay, so you're on a quest or something? You trying to find something that's going to help keep them safe with... I think with just you there, they're either going to be safe or in even worse trouble than they were before. She goes, I do tend to be getting in trouble now, but I also be thinking that there's something of great power hidden out here. And I think I might be just the one to find it, yeah? And I think you there, rude boy, you might be the one to lead it. You seem to be one who fights like the devil. Oh. I don't really fight like the devil, and I know, but, you know, when juice kicks in, fighting's at least easy. She goes, ha. That's exactly what you'd be saying, devil boy. Now, let's see. As they stop to rest, get their first full rest that night along the road, I'm going to say this is 50-50. Does Tawny's hindrance, her crazy psychotic break hindrance, come to effect? That is an 88. So that is a no, which is good. It's doubles, but it's not doubles that goes over the fate chart. So that is especially good for our heroes right now. So as that first night comes to a close, they pull over and Keem goes, all right, do you want first watch? You want me to take first watch? She goes, why don't you take first watch? I still need to bandage up a little bit. And he looks over and she's replacing some of the gauze around her arm where it had been severed, and she just reattached it. Some of the strings are beginning to hang out where the skin is beginning to push it out, but not enough of it has fully reattached it to her arm. Though she begins to flex fingers that seem to have more life in them than they realistically really should. He just goes, that's so fucking weird. All right, you go ahead and get some shut eyes, a bedroll, and there's a bedroll back there if you need to sleep out under the stars. Might just do that. So she goes and lays out the heavy Milky Way overhead. Nikim just kind of keeps one eye open, scanning around the horizon, watching for any breaks or changes, anything that might signify somebody's approaching. He occasionally lifts his rifle up to his eye. Let's see here. Let's give him a notice roll just to see if he finds anything of interest. He's got a D6. Oh, that explodes. With the rays, though we are in dim light. Yeah, so I'm going to say that I think dim light is at -2. I can check that in a little bit. So it's at least, it's a success, no rays. But as he kind of scans around, he thinks he sees quick motion. Kind of raises his gun up to his, raises his stock up to his shoulder just to get a good peering through the night sight. He flips it on and everything goes kind of that neon green. So now I'm going to give him a survival check to see if he knows what that is. Again, this is affected by dim lights, -2. It's 4 and 1. Whatever it is, scampers off through the dark pretty quick. He drops rifle. Goes, shit, this isn't the right one for it anyway. Light will just leave little blood chunks. I don't even know what the fuck it was that she offered me earlier. It was salty as hell. That was pretty good. I wonder if she's got any more. Might have to check in her pack. Nah, fuck that. I'll wait till she wakes up. And as they kind of trade positions in the night, she gets up after just a few hours. She goes, I think it's your turn. Why don't you go get in that blankets? He goes, are you gonna go crazy and kill me? Might do that. Alright, well, just don't wake me up. And as he rolls off to sleep, we get another glimpse into Yakim's history. So I'm going to ask this question then. Does Yakim dream of the continuation of the Juicer Uprising? I'm going to say, I'll give it 50-50. It's 48. So as Yakim's mind just begins to reel in some of the images that he still has. In those days where it seems like nothing's going right for the Juicer Liberation Army, the Coalition has called in additional troops as they are continuously to assault the fortress that the Coalition has built for these now what is believed to be experiments on Juicers. An attempt to control, to murder, no one really knows. But something is obviously afoot. I'll say that, Yakim remembers being in one of the war tents late in the night. Julian the First, now giving himself that moniker and everybody following along with it, stands around a table with several of the higher-ranking juicer, as best as you could call, generals. And this is the part that Ikeem doesn't fully understand at first, but it seems to fit just in with the entire idea. You know, the Juicer Liberation Army was not a thing that had been constructed. It was formed organically in an attempt to determine exactly what was going on. Why did the Coalition call them all here? What did they offer the Prometheus treatment? A way to extend life, nay, even prevent juicer burnout. They had shown that it had worked, didn't they? Some of the oldest juicers out there, mercs that were mercenaries in the, or that were legends in their own right, who lived well past the 6 to 8 years that most juicers are given. And yet, here they were. One Coalition officer freaked out. One Coalition officer, fearful that something was about to happen, called for a triggering and a detonation, and suddenly juicers all over the camp fizzled out and died. And now, the JLA, the Juicer Liberation Army, as they're calling themselves, led by Julian the First. Ikeem, let's see here, we're going to roll. Does Ikeem know where Julian takes his name from? 61, 50-50, yeah. Of course, Ikeem, having grown up in Kingsdale, knows exactly that Julian was the name to a fictional juicer character that popped up in all sorts of action heroic vids that just permeated throughout the black market. Banned in the Coalition states, yet still kind of agreed to be watched by just about everyone. This over-the-top action hero performing death-defying feats, but always with this promise that one day he may die. May he die with his fist gripped around the throats of his enemies. And as the main, titular character, Julian, was always the one who just came out by the skin of his teeth. He became a little bit of kind of that action hero folklore for juicers everywhere. So many kids signed up, and the reason that they signed up, they specifically said, I want to be like Julian. Now, the man who took this new mantle, his name was Julian, of course. He was not the one that was specifically mentioned in the fiction books. These occurred well before his conversion first occurred. But Julian I has taken the name much in the same ways as the Roman Empire, Roman emperors, having chosen who they want to be going forward. Ikeem, of course, looks up to him. Every juicer in this army does. There are no real generals. There are no lieutenants. Nobody is really taking a rank except for Julian. But those who have shown a deftness with particular tactics, techniques, weaponry, or leading troops have kind of built a little bit of a war council that's around Julian. And as they sit comparing a holovid of the map, as best as they can detail from recons in and around, the sorties that they have been preparing seem to be all leading to one particular breach. And Julian looks up, his eyes twinkling a little bit, and kind of that combination of excitement is, it's obvious that the juice is beginning to flow through him. None of those chemicals are slowing him down right now. And Julian kind of, all right, well, the good news is here, kids. They know we're here, and they know we're coming. And there's a round of chuckles. Yeah, the reason that's good news is they're not expecting which way we're going to be coming. He jabs a finger down as though the three-dimensional map was actually flat right in front of him. Those on his side of the map, of course, can see exactly what he's pointing at. The rest, including Ikeem, just kind of strain around, their eyes glinting a little bit to get an idea for what he is gesturing directly at. He goes, all right, well, we're going to have three main sortie groups. One of them hit here, Western Wall, and then along the north. North looks like they should be trying to block off any reinforcements. I need it to look good, get some flyers up there. But the real effect, ground troops that I want to make sure that we get all the way in, they are going to be the fourth tip of this trident. Can't be known, can't be seen. I want them to come in here. And he points to a section darkened and harder to see over the hollow bit, but From Yakim's vantage point, he manages to catch a perfect glimpse. What he's pointing to looks like an old maintenance hatch, maybe a mechanic shop where they would haul some of the larger vehicles underground to bring them into the fortress without having to bypass or get through the gates. But now he realizes, of course, what he's trying to do. And Yakim kind of nods. He goes, are you looking for volunteers? Because I'll volunteer for that. Julian goes, I wasn't, but son, I appreciate the fact that you raised your hand so quick. Yeah. All right. We'll take you on. And Keem just kind of nods. Everybody around him goes, you don't even know what the fuck he's doing. Why would you go along with that? Keem just like, well, it's because he's Julian, man. You can't really fight with Julian. And when he gets a plan, it's going to work. The rest of them begin to nod. Suddenly, one of the guys to his right begins to shake his shoulder. He goes, no, you can't do this. You can't do this. You can't go out. He goes, what the fuck are you talking about? Wait, who are you? What are you doing? No. You don't be going out that way. And then suddenly Yakim opens his eyes and kind of right across his face, upside down, he sees Tawny leaning over him. The first kind of pre-dawn light scattering just behind her. She goes, oh, you give me a big scare there, boy. I thought you'd be dying. You sitting there muttering in your sleep. He goes, I was having a dream, you fucking crazy. She goes, oh, no, I stopped having those years ago. Yeah, better that way. That way, when you see something, you know it's not real. He goes, no, you're literally defining being crazy, but fine, whatever. I think it's time to wake up anyway. They get back on the road. I'm going to ask a fake question here. I'm going to call it, as they are heading east, I'll end up asking two questions here. And the first one is going to be likely.
This is the future.
Do they encounter any signs of coalition attempting to make a foothold out here? So this is likely, which means an 85 and lower. Revolution. It's an 86. this particular path, it would be prime real estate for the coalition states to start taking over. As they start driving through, of course, the coalition wants this. Everybody knows it's an hidden secret. But of course, they've got their hands currently busy with the rebellion in Quebec, combined with their attempts to really build the siege around the city of Tolkien. So I'm going to ask the next question, which is, given the fact that the coalition hasn't actually started taking over, I'm going to drop this down to a 50-50, but do they find signs of any village, civilization, or anything out here? 32, yep. I'm going to go over to the Rifts book, and we are going to build ourselves a little human outpost. All right, so let's go towards the back of the book. Got contacts, outlies, encounters, emergency relief, arcane anomalies, settlement sizes. All right, so let us build our first town here. Start with the D4, settlement size, it's a 1, it's a homestead, where 4 people live. Now, the tech level is 6. It is odd. Alright. We need to start writing this down. So they find a homestead. Odd. 4 people. Let's find out the denizens. Let's roll a d8.
This is the future.
8. DB separatist. Well, that would explain it. Their economy is 6. Ranching. Well, I think I can safely skip over government. And truthfully, probably the moon current events. Well, actually, let's roll for that. That might be an interesting. So it says to draw a card. Okay, so this one's kind of interesting. The action card suit determines the local atmosphere. Spades is corrupt, clubs is isolationist, hearts is ethical, and diamonds is prosperous. Okay, so we drew the five of spades. Crisis.
Okay.
Crisis! So, we have a homestead, a small family of four people. They are DBs, but they are specific in ranching. So, let's ask a quick question just to make sure that we can get this one nailed down. Are these the, what are they called? The Fenois, I think, the Fenny, 75, right on the money. So, yeah. I'll have to take a look at that. But using weird technology, however, they are currently having a crisis. Now, what is the emergency relief they need? Let's roll a d20. A 14. Slavers. Okay. Roll a d6. 5. It is the black market. Okay. Black market. That is definitely a form of trouble that I'm not sure that anybody wants to be a part of. Okay. So, as the two of them begins to pull around, they see off in the distance, just kind of raised up on a hill, easier to see as the majority of what's around it has been cleared away for the large wooden fence, the wooden created fence that leads up to this relatively larger ranch. It's a classic looking ranch house. Which is interesting because as they start passing by, they kind of turn and
might be able to go up there and barter. Might be able to get some fresher supplies, some food. Maybe they need something. I got some credits or whatever that we could possibly give them. And Tawny looks up and she's like, okay. No, that's, that might be a good idea then.
Now, let's take a look. Because Tawny has some psionic abilities. Let's see what she also has. Arcane Protection, Detect Conceal Arcana, Fear, Mind Link, and Warrior's Gift. Okay. She just kind of goes, I do be thinking though that if something goes a little weird, and she kind of reaches out a hand, she's going to roll her psionics, which is a d8. It's a 5, so it's a success. She goes, now, and suddenly an ethereal voice floats into Yakim's head. It doesn't sound immediately like Tawny's voice. It sounds a little bit more melodic. She goes, and now you can hear me directly in here. Do not be afraid of this. This is perfectly normal. And Yakim just kind of blinks a little bit. He's like, what the fuck? Get out of my... Who are you? And Tawny's voice comes back, as well as the ethereal voice echoing the same thing back into his head. That's just me, and you just need to listen. You can speak while we're in here together. You still be a rude boy, though.
Because, wait, that's your voice in my head.
Yeah, it is my voice in your head, and yours in mine. We can talk to each other this way. Oh, fuck that. Okay, why do you think this is a good idea? So that way, if we go up there and we are separated, we, of course, can still be in contact. Oh, shit. Okay, it's a good idea. I just wasn't prepared for it. You could have warned me first.
She goes, what's the fun nut?
Alright. As they begin to pull up, the smoke or the dust coming up from behind his vehicle, one of the ranchers suddenly picks up his head. The rake in his hand suddenly disappears and becomes a longer rifle. It's not a matter of this person just switched from this thing to one from the other, but instead a simple twist and the tool became something he needed immediately. And as he approaches, the creature comes up, a 10-gallon Stetson hat on its head, a bandana draped around its neck, a vest with rolled up sleeves, or with the shirt underneath with rolled up sleeves, heavy chaps over top of what look like denim pants and thick boots, but the face is no cowboy that has been seen in our time. Instead, two wide, almost leaf-shaped ears come out, but at the ends of the ears are actually just these cat's eyes, both of which pivot and turn to watch Akeem. And where we would expect to see the regular eyes, instead there is a series of openings, almost like nostrils or gills. They lead down to a series of whiskers over top, just a thin, faint fur line that covers the face. But the whiskers themselves almost look akin to a catfish, which completes the look even more to a wide mouth that seems to go from just underneath one of these ear leaves to the other side. It turns quickly down to a bit of a frown, the rifle itself at least draped up over the shoulder, but warning without direct threat. The hand kind of comes up into a pretty well-recognized gesture of stop where you are. The creature approaches, the gun kind of like pulled into its to the owner's elbow, and he approaches up to the driver's side door, kind of leans down, tipping the hat back just slightly, so that way Akeem looks up and sees his creature. And the creature looks down and goes, "Well, hey there, partners. You know, we don't exactly take two folks just driving up our walk that way. You mind if I ask ya what you doing out here?" And Akeem just goes, "We saw your ranch, just a couple of travelers. We were hoping to maybe barter, see if we can get something to eat, some food." The creature kind of nods, goes, "Seems like a likely story. Tell y'all's what. Why don't you just step out of this here vehicle, keep your weapons either in their holsters or in the car. I just want to get a good look." As they kind of step out, hands up, Akeem just kind of glances around. Give him a notice roll here, which I think, yeah, I said it's a D6. Well, they both explode. Alright, so it's with a raise. Akeem notices it right away. There's a sense that something is off. Tawny kind of picks it up from the back of his mind. I'm going to give her a notice roll too. She's only got a D6. It's a 1. She's looking a little quizzically in his voice, or in his head. He just hears the, "What are you staring at over there?" He goes, in the back of his mind, he goes, "It's a big ranch. Why is he the only one who approached us? They got some of the best snipers in the world because I can't see them. Or something funky's going on." And the creature just kind of looks him up and down. "Alright, well, I need you fine folks to, you know, just be aware. You know, take too kindly to the message you may be sending from your, you know, maybe benefactors. But I just want my people back. I'm willing to trade whatever it is that you need to get my people back." Akeem, "Sorry, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Now, you don't know what I'm talking about, mister? I haven't got the fucking foggiest. You got people missing?" I'm gonna give Akeem here a persuasion roll, which is a D4. A 2 and a 1. He goes, well, now, that seems like quite a likely story. I mean, you all folks just came out here not too long ago, a couple days ago. Well, you took my offspring, and I quite like them back. So whatever it is you need me to give you, just be sure to give my people back, and sure, we can trade or whatever you want to call it. You can just... I just want to make sure I understand. You think that we are here to trade for your people back? You think we stole your kids? The creature just kind of blinks a little bit, a wide blink, given the fact that his eyes are on these long ear-like stalks. Well, didn't you? Nah, that's what I've been trying to tell you. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Well, why don't you pull your car right on up to the big building up there? Maybe we can talk here, fella. Alright. I take it you're not just gonna sell me some food. Why don't we talk first? Fuck. Alright. Come on. Come on, Tanya. Let's get back in the car. Let's find out what he wants. And as they begin to haul back up, the conversation that they're having in their head. Are we really going to take on something when you already have reason to be out here? I don't fucking know, right? If this guy might be the only one we could get some food from out here, and you know, who really knows what else is going on? If he's got someone getting snatched up by slavers, the least we could do is at least check it out. Do you have a soft spot all the time like this, or is it just when there's kids involved? No, I don't like hearing about kids getting taken away from the folks, that's all. Mm-hmm. The creature invites him in to a large table that looks like it had been curved by clay, but made completely of a single piece of wood. Weird long clawed feet at the end, and the tabletop itself almost seems to be like a wave in motion, despite the fact that it is completely flat, perfectly suited for whatever may occur on it. And as Yukim just kind of sits down, he goes, it's a nice place. Thanks, Arafella. We found it. We've been fixing it up. You know, we didn't really know that we were going to be out here for as long as we are, but here we are. We just want to be left alone. I get that. So do you want to tell me who took your kids? As well, I thought they might have been your employers, but see here, fella. Been having issues with some of the folks who call themselves, they call themselves the Dark Hand of the Market. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Oh, Dark Hand of the Market, huh? Let's give him a common knowledge roll. No. Yeah. Of course Yukim knows. Alright, well, so you're having issues with the black market they're operating out here, huh? Well, it would appear to be so, stranger. You have dealings with them? I've had dealings around them. Well, they wanted to take possession of my farm and my ranch. And of course, it's the only thing we've got, and we just want to be left alone, so I told him no. And then, you know, my mate and I, we got up, and we all our offspring are gone. I'm sorry, man, that really sucks. Thank you, stranger. Tell me, I'd be more than happy to give you some supplies to get you back on the road if you seem like the type, the two of you might be able to make a trade. Maybe get my folks back. He just kind of looks, and he looks over to Tawny. She seems to have a little bit of a wide grin on her face. And Yukim just kind of, we're going to give him, he is a dedicated person. So I'm going to actually say it's unlikely that he's going to take on this just, you know, rescue, but chaos factor of 7, that's still a 65 and below. It's a 9. Excuse me. That makes it an extreme yes. It's an exceptional yes, confirming expectation and beyond. Akeem. How old are your kids, man? It's like, oh, well, littlest one, he's not but 7 cycles old. My oldest one, though, she's at about 14. He goes, oh, fuck. No, the kids shouldn't be away from their folks, man. I'll help you get them back. Do you know where I can find their headquarters or something? And he just kind of, oh, goody. You serious? You're going to go get my kids back? Yes. It's about a 3-day drive from here. He goes, please tell me east. Let's see. We're going to roll for this. I'm going to say 1 is north, 2 is south, 3 is east, 4 is west. It's a 1. He goes, no, fella. It's about 3 days north. All right. Well, it's still fucked up, man. And I get it. I'll get your kids back. You help us out with some food, right? Sure will, mister. It's my fun. He goes, all right. You have a contact? He goes, sure do. Let's go over to the names table, huh? Quite like being at the absolute end of a cold, but still having the kind of secondary effects there, right? Random coughs that actually don't do anything anymore outside of just being a little annoying. Alright, names. Plot twists, names, character appearances. I thought I had this marked out already. Nope, I definitely don't want forest descriptions. Don't need curses. Could have sworn I had marked out which one was names. There it is. It's on the very first page. Of course I would put it there, so I wouldn't miss it. So, let's roll 2d100. 51. That is... location. And... 82. Tar. Cation tar. Okay, no, I know how to do this. He goes, oh yeah, no. Fellow goes by the name of Kansas City Tar. He goes, really, Kansas City Tar? He goes, yes, sir. He couple day drive north. If you need any horses to get across that, he goes, I got my car, man. It's quite all right. He goes, yes, sir. No, it's mighty fine of you. Mighty fine of you. Can I offer you some this here coffee or something? It's absolutely fantastic. Eat the beans directly, and then you drink some hot water, and it boils in your stomach. It gives you a nice little kick. He goes, could you grind it up and run hot water through it? He goes, that takes away all the flavor. No, I'm good. I don't need any coffee. Tawny goes, I might be liking some coffee like that now. Are you here? Oh, mighty fine. And he hands over a small bag of, completely unprocessed, unroasted, just still bright red coffee beans. And she goes, this be making a nice little wake up. Yeah. He keeps kind of looks. He's like, all right, we'll be back in just a few days with the kids. All right. He goes, wait, you don't want no payment or any other explanations? He goes, if you're dealing with a black market, I have a suspicion I'm going to have to be raiding a compound anyway. Best thing I could do is go in quiet, get your kids, and get out. If I have to do any negotiations, then, well, it's a black market. There ain't no winning with them. Oh. Well, now I don't want no folks hurt now. We peaceful folk. You know, we just want to be kindly and good neighbors out here. He goes, well, then I'm afraid you may have picked the wrong planet, buddy. I'll be back. All right, so you're going to now put a whole new plot. And that is, you've got a new thread of rescue the rancher's kids. All right. And new character, Kansas City Tar.
Please join us on Patreon at patreon.com/dyingsigh. Gain early access to episodes, access to our Discord, and just generally help support the show. This game references the Savage Worlds game system, available at Pinnacle Entertainment Group at www.peginc.com. It is unofficial media content permitted under the Media Network Content Agreement. This content is not managed, approved, or endorsed by Pinnacle Entertainment Group. Certain portions of the materials used are the intellectual properties of Pinnacle, and all rights are reserved. Savage Worlds, all related settings and unique characters, locations and characters, logos, and trademarks are copyrights of Pinnacle Entertainment Group.